This is Batman. Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. It's what it does, because I'm Batman.
Welcome to episode 45 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Joined in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Brent Cassina, Brandon Christopher, Rap Suku, and myself delve into the world of legacy heroes, going all the way back to James Rhodes and spanning forward to the New Age, Blue Beetle, and the new replacements. Are they doing the job they set out to do, or were the originals better? We get into that, we even mention the Slingers. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 45 of Comic Timing. Well, it's episode 45. We're only five away from episode 50, unless we decide to do some specials for episode 49. I love Raging Bullets. Raging Bullets is a fun show. We're joined by the co-host, not co-host, co-host, Brent Cassina, who is back on his fast, speedy internet in the world of College Land. How are you, Brent?
I just took my watch off after losing it.
Oh, good. Good. Well, I'm sure you'll find it again. Does it have a signal so you can send a signal Superman, or is that somebody else?
Yeah, it beeps every hour.
Cool. Although I doubt you would ever call yourself Action Man. We're joined by Raph Suhu, who is the Geeks Uniter, uniting geeks everywhere, over at Geeks Unite Podcast. Hi, Raph.
I have a podcast?
Yeah, you do.
I think.
Oh, really? Well, yeah.
It's been so long.
I swear. Well, Juan thinks you have a podcast. I don't know what you think.
Well, I think Juan's gonna have to reconsider anyway.
Well,
yeah, that geek so debate long. Episode you did was awesome.
Yeah, it was. Too bad I wasn't on it.
Should do ones like that more often.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and Raph, it was totally awesome when you went out of town without telling your co-host first.
Yeah. He knew. He knew. I'm leaving for Atlanta. I can't make CNI 100. Teary face on the forum. You know, it's like, geez.
I got a text message from Juan, all right, asking, hey, do you know where Raph is? I have a podcast for him to put up. I'm like, he's in Atlanta. And Ron is like, he's in Atlanta?
Ron?
Yeah, Ron. Ron Burgundy. Juan.
You said Ron.
Juan called to tell me he didn't know where you were. So explain yourself, fool.
I don't know. You know what? I'll make it up to him. I'll find him a girlfriend.
Okay, good. That works. We're also joined on this podcast by a guy who hasn't put out a podcast in possibly even longer than Raph. He is Brandon Christopher. And do you technically still have your podcast, Brandon, or is it MIA?
It's still there. I'm still paying for Libsyn.
Okay, cool. That works. And that would, of course, be the quarter bin. And I was on it, and it was syndicated here on Comic Timing, so you probably are familiar with Brandon, and he's been on the show before. But welcome back. It's been a while.
Oh, yeah. It's been way too long.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, on this episode, we're going to be discussing legacy heroes. Now, what do I mean by legacy heroes? Well, I mean people taking the place of familiar heroes that you know and love. Now, this has happened in the past with Robin and Blue Beetle and the Atom and even Batman for a while, and hell, even Superman for a while. It's happened a couple times. We want to discuss on the show whether or not we enjoy it or whether or not we would rather see the original heroes stick around. Now, I know one guy in this panel really likes one of the replacements, but we'll get into that later on. But let's start things off with the first legacy hero to come on the scene. That, of course, was Jason Todd. Now, I know that there were some previous ones, in Marvel and DC, but he was the first real one to catch everybody's eye as Jason Todd. He was a Robin that got brought on when Dick Grayson got too old to be Robin. And Robin then moved on to be Nightwing, and you had Jason Todd there. Now, I know you guys have read some of his body of work in the past. Did you enjoy Jason Todd as Robin from what you saw from the previous works that you read? And we'll start off with Brandon first, since he's the guest on the show.
Honestly, I like Todd, but he was, again, the complaint with most people have is that he was just too arrogant as Robin. I mean, with Dick, we saw him, like, through the 40s, 50s, and 60s as, like, this almost, like, protege of Batman. But then we had Jason in the 80s, who just came on and just did his own thing, which is probably why he ended up getting him killed off as a character. Because, really, he was just too different from Dick.
Well, he didn't say Holy Houdini Batman nearly as much as Dick did, so I was okay with that.
Yes, yeah. But, I mean, and honestly, he was a good character, he was a strong character, but I think he was just too radically different from what we were used to as fans of Batman and Robin. It changed the dynamic too much.
I guess. Well, Brent, what do you feel about that? I mean, are you okay with the changing heroes, specifically, I guess, with the character change that we got from going Jason Todd after having Dick Grayson for so many years? Was he suited to be Robin in your mind?
I thought it was okay since he was just a sidekick. I mean, he's not really the main character.
Well,
and I mean, Dick Grayson had moved on.
Yeah, well, Robin is very you know, integral to the Batman mythos. You know, without Robin, Batman's just a guy running around in a cape. You know, he has no, like, help, really, unless he has the Bat family around him. Well, Robin is the start of that Bat family. With Jason, though, I mean, was he too arrogant for you?
To be honest, I really haven't read any Jason Todd Robin stories, so.
Okay. Well,
I like the idea that he's like a mad Robin now. Mm-hmm. Like, he's angry at Bruce and all that stuff. That was in Batman Annual 25, so that's about all I can say.
Okay, cool. Well, Rack, what about you? I'm sure you probably read a little more Jason Todd than Brent did, I hope.
I've read Death in the Family, and I read a trade with a few Jason Todd stories. Just because I'm so I've only, like, the majority of stuff I read, though, is Tim Drake and Dick Grayson, so actually, most of my exposure to Jason Todd is all the Under the Hood and All the Reason stuff. But from what I've read from the old Robin, I can see why they wanted him dead. He wasn't fitting in with it. Just he doesn't fit that image of Robin that I have from Tim and from Dick. So, and it just didn't work out. I'm sorry. It just didn't work out, Jason.
So Tim was a better job for you.
Yeah, you know what? Tim is really—he's really Robin. Like Dick for me, just because I didn't grow up with Dick being my Robin. That sounds so wrong somehow. Dick being my Robin.
Well, hey, I mean, there are some drawings out there where Batman has some Dick, if you know what I mean.
Hey-o!
And then we go downhill.
All right.
It's only 11:06, folks.
Let's go back to the serious.
But yeah, I mean, Jason Todd just isn't Robin. I mean, for me, Batman and Robin are a cohesive fighting unit. They fight together, they solve crimes together, they work as one, even though they're two separate people. And Jason just kept, it was all about him, it was all about his, you know, what he's done, and it's just like, I don't need that from my Robin. I mean, if it was Dick doing that, you know, after he had established a career, I understand that from Dick, but not from Jason Todd.
Well,
but really now, is Batman and Robin a cohesive fighting unit? I mean, now that Robin has had his own title for 160 issues, as, you know, Tim Drake, is he really Batman's sidekick? I mean, I know Grant Morrison is using him, and even, like, prior to 1 year later, he wasn't featured prominently in any of the Batman books.
I still say he is, only because, like, really, the character of Tim Drake is just such a strong character. I mean, even looking back at his miniseries Robin 1, 2, and 3, they were all pretty much standalone stories about Robin without Batman. But, I mean, his character is just so strong to the cause of Batman. I mean, he really is another protege of Batman, like how Dick was.
Well, I actually kind of feel like they're more of a team than a, you know, sidekick and, you know, Batman role now. I feel like they're more on the same level. Specifically, since Identity Crisis, ever since he adopted Tim, it seems that Tim has matured a lot, and he's more of an adult now than he ever was before. Sure, that will happen when you have so much tragedy in your life, but he feels much more like an equal to Batman now, as opposed to a protege, even though he's still learning from Batman. They're more of a team than a sidekick situation.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Is that different because Tim is a little older than Dick was when he Dick was Robin, or at least drawn older at least, because I think he's like 17, right?
Yeah,
closing in on 18,
mm-hmm. Somewhere around there. Yeah, I mean, he is in high school, and he's definitely not a freshman in high school. I know he's like a junior or something like that, so he is about 17 or 18. Yeah, and I mean, that would happen with the maturity. Chances are this will be the character that remains Robin for the rest of his career. I can actually see that. I mean, like, specifically, I can see him growing up using the Robin name as a grown-up hero, or perhaps even becoming Red Robin, but I'd rather him be Robin for the rest of his career.
I agree with that, only because we've seen with this Robin, we've seen him in, like, a lot of good leadership roles. I mean, he's been with the Titans, he's led the Titans, he's been with Young Justice, and he's led Young Justice. And you see, even with those books, you've seen him mature through those books as well. And that's where I think that's kind of the role of what Batman is to other heroes. I mean, Superman may be the one that they all look to, but we all know that, and the Justice League usually is always the it's always Batman who's been like the leader, who's always been the tactician, and that's where Dick is. I mean, that's where Tim is now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where Dick is also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that comes with being trained by Batman. With Tim, do you feel that the legacy has ended with Tim? I mean, do you imagine there being another Robin anytime in, say, the next 10, 15 years or so? Or do you see Tim remaining in the role of Robin?
Well, I mean, they showed us the future in a possible future in Titans Tomorrow. I think if Bruce ever retires, I think he's the most natural Batman. But I don't think we're going to see Bruce retire for at least another 100 years. So I think Tim will be Batman. I mean, Tim will be Robin for a long. I don't see him giving it up. And who's going to do it? The only person that's done it since he came on was his ex girlfriend, who, you know, what a great run she had.
Oh jeez.
Thanks, DC. You
what was
say
it, like,
this.
4 months. It was like 4 months. Yeah, it was like 4 months until she ended up dead.
And a brutal torture execution. You know, like, ooh.
Yeah, DC is the happy bunch. They love putting their heroes in very happy situations. Like, hey, Robin, you're having a good time, right? Yeah, your girlfriend's dead, and so's your father. Deal with it, bitch.
So making Spider-Man a wanted felon by forging hospital documents and, punching out a police officer is a happy time?
Well, that too. All right. On second thoughts, comic books are not that friendly these days. Period.
No.
Yeah.
They're fucking Joe Quesada.
Dan DiDio, you bastard.
Oh, fucking Joe Quesada, but you don't say fucking Dan DiDio?
I mean, what's Dan DiDio hate? I can't do it like Centrist, but I can try.
Next question.
Next question over here. Lightning round. Dan DiDio, over here.
Yes or no? Yes or no? Yes or no? The answer is yes or no. Next question.
Is Asriel going to get his own book?
Yes or no? Next question.
Crypto books. It's been neutered.
Oh, that was the worst thing he said. Anyway, let's move on to Brent here. Do you see the legacy ending with Tim, Brent?
He really has been the most natural Robin, I think. I don't know why that is. I would take a stab at it and say that it's because he wasn't raised by Bruce.
Yeah.
You know, he still had his mom and his dad to raise him for most of his life, whereas Dick was raised by Bruce, and that, you know, can't be easy, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the man's the goddamn Batman. So I can see why he's kind of adapted to Bruce's ways a little more, because he's had his foundations built somewhere else longer than Dick had. Mm-hmm. So that's why I can kind of see him being Robin for the longest and being the most successful in the long run. Because, I mean, if Tim had to take over being Batman when Bruce becomes 80 and then Tim's still, like, you know, 30 or whatever the timeline is, I don't know. Because we all know Bruce Wayne ages faster than Robin in the DC universe.
Dude, Bruce Wayne right now should be, like, 157.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, no, I can see him taking up the mantle at least. So, yeah.
Like, perhaps in, like, a Batman Beyond role? Because I know that there was actually they visited some sort of, like, alternate future thing in Superman Batman once, whereas opposed to seeing, you know, Terry McGinnis in the Batman Beyond suit, you saw Tim in the Batman Beyond suit. I mean, would you like to see him in a Batman Beyond role as opposed to a Batman role?
I don't know. I think he could do it by himself.
I agree.
Yeah, I guess so.
Do you want to see DC shy away from the whole angry, bitter old broken Bruce, like, from the Batcave, barking commands at a Batman?
Well, he's supposed to do that now, right?
Sort of.
Isn't he supposed to be a happier Batman? Like, he's not the grim, paranoid, gritty one. He's starting to trust his friends and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, you look at Kingdom Come, that's what DC's going through now. You see, in Kingdom Come, you see Batman in like, you know, the... with the bionic suit, you know, not being able to walk on his own, walk in the cave all alone by himself. I mean, I don't want to see that from the Batman, especially since the reboot that we've had now. And I like this dynamic of Batman better. I mean, he actually feels like an actual part of the DC Universe now, mm-hmm. and an actual integral part of the DC Universe. But, you know, if they do want to go that way, I'm okay with it, because we've seen it before. It just to me, I would like to see Batman in the role of, like, you know, Batman Beyond, Bruce being there, being able to help him if he needs it, as, like, you know, like a guy to saying, I've been there, done that type of thing.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. But, you know, that does sort of lead to the question, I mean, do you want to see anybody else in that Batman suit? That does lead to the question, I mean, do you want to see anybody else in the Batman suit anytime soon? Because the last time it happened, you had this crazy dude, and he was, like, Azbat and stuff, and, like, he got this, like, armor and ran around all, like, woo, I'm crazy, boo, you're dead. And
he was extreme.
And he was extreme with an X.
With a dash.
A dash. But... oh, man, I can see where this episode's going. But, yeah, I mean, he was, like, the badass hero, but he didn't really feel like Batman to me. I'm sure that Brent has a different reason behind liking Azbats and all that, but let's actually go to that. I mean, were you guys okay with Jean-Paul Valley being Batman when he was? And, I mean, that did sort of prove that anybody else in a Batsuit might not really be the best idea. Brent, why did you like Azbat so much?
I liked him because I was 7 years old and the armor was a badass.
That'll work. Rick Cassina just explains to the entire world the appeal of Azbats. A 7-year-old saying that armor is cool is probably the only reason why people like Azbats.
I still think it's cool.
Dude, you know that people that didn't like Spider-Man probably said, wow, he's got armor now? That's really cool. I want armor. I like Spider-Man. And the minute that he got rid of it, it's like, why is he wearing black? That's not cool.
Why? I like the spider armor, too. Did I tell you that?
Yeah.
Wait, which spider armor?
the new one.
The new one.
Iron Spider.
Oh, God. Iron Spider?
Hey, I have an Iron Spider shirt. I have the Iron Spider shirt from New York Comic Con, yeah.
Bigger and better.
And double the space.
2008. Yes.
But yeah, that was your only reasoning behind it? I mean, when you go back now, do you still like him?
Well, I did read, like, a bunch of the Night Quest issues, and I've reread the Nightfall and all that stuff a couple of times, and I do like the story, but I think it works better on a short-term level, mm-hmm. better than, like, a long-term. But I do think it would work better if, you know, the person were more receptive to doing it. Uh-huh. I mean, Jean-Paul Valley was kind of forced into it and still had, you know, all those mental issues.
Yeah.
And then Dick Grayson and the Prodigal storyline, which I think is absolute crap, but, you know, he was kind of reluctant the entire time and made for an awkward read.
Yeah.
So I think if you find somebody that's receptive to it on a short-term level, it might work better.
I say let's go with Superman. Superman will be the best Batman. I mean, he'll do an amazing job, really. Hey, I mean, come on. What, You saw that episode of Superman Batman Adventures.
Yeah, that was good.
That was an awesome episode right there, where he had to pretend to be Superman. I mean, Batman the entire time. That was good times. All right, let's be serious.
How'd you do that?
let's go back to being serious here for a minute, and let's actually let's ask everybody about Azbats. Let's start with Raph here. Well, let's move on to Raph. That is, let's move on to Raph here. Were you a fan of Azbats at all?
I was 10, and I just got started. I didn't really read comics at that point, and I thought the armor was cool, just like Brent.
Another one for the armor, two points.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I went back and read it, and for me, it was just kind of like this thing where it's like, this is why Batman's not the Punisher, this is why Batman can't be any of these 90s guys who's hyper-violent and kills everyone.
Yeah.
I got the point, you know, Batman shouldn't do these things. I mean, I thought Jean-Paul is a great character, mm-hmm. but it just kind of was like, I mean, I can kind of see Batman doing those things, but not Bruce Wayne. Like, maybe like, it was sort of it sort of went like to Dark Knight Returns, except to a little more extreme. And I just didn't feel that Batman should be doing that at this point. You know, like once Bruce came back, obviously he's not going to do that again. But I thought the character was great. I liked Azbats. I liked what he did. It's just, you know, I kind of got, you know, that's why Batman's not the Punisher was the message I kept getting, though. I'm like, all right, fine. You know, I can agree with that. But, you know, if Jean-Paul just took the armor and just changed the color and decided to become just Azrael, that would have been fine with me, too.
Okay. So what you're saying is that his actions sort of detached you from the character of Batman because it didn't feel like Batman?
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, he's not Batman the Dark Knight. He's Batman the Dark Avenger, you know? Like, he's just there to kick your ass and nothing. I mean, Batman, he's a detective. You know, he solves the mysteries, he solves the crimes, he takes down the bad guys, he brings them to jail. Yep. Jean Paul finds the bad guys, kills them, takes no prisoners, and that's it. I mean, I can see why people don't like that. You know, they don't want to see that as Batman, because that Batman is a detective, and he does have honor code, which Jean Paul didn't.
And also, I mean, going back even to Tim, I mean, he was just like, oh, yeah, I don't need you. Go away.
Just bitch slapped Tim around a little, too. I didn't like that.
Yeah, I know. He was just, you know, he came into the cave and he was like, what the hell are you doing here? You're that other guy's sidekick. You know, and I mean, that's not
the way you
treat, yeah, that's not the way you treat Robin. You do not throw Robin out on the street unless he's Jason Todd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, he's from the street.
You throw him out a crowbar if he is Jason Todd. Just, you know. Hey, Joker, I got a crowbar for you. Oh, really, Bats? Yeah, you know, just kind of finish him off.
Oh.
Yeah, just do that.
That's not very nice, Raph. That's not very nice.
It isn't, but that's what the DC fans did. They said, hey, Joker, here's a crowbar. You know, you ever see a fruity-colored sidekick around? You just kind of hit him in the head. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of sad that you're actually racking up fictional characters on your list of people that need to avoid you now.
I know.
It's like you had the restraining order. You know, Jim Lee has a restraining order against you. You know, Brett Ratner sort of is there. I mean, you've got Bruce Jones. Oh, Lordy. But yeah, I mean, like, once you get to the fact that you get fictional characters putting out restraining orders against you, you've gone too far. Brandon, what did you feel about Asbats when you read him?
Oddly enough, the first time I ever saw Asbats was in Catwoman number 5,
okay,
way back in 93.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, look at that. It's new Batman. Armor. Kind of nifty. And that was about it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's all you felt about the character. Like, I mean, were you upset at all to see a different Batman?
It's like, I just started reading comics, like, last year.
Uh-huh.
And the only reason I got it because, like, I went to a bulk food place, and they had, like, comics there. And I just got, like, 90 comics for, like, $15. And I'm like, yeah, let me go read these. And I had no real attachment to the characters.
Okay.
Wasn't until, like, the last 5 years I've actually gained attachment to these characters. Like, no. And, like, with Asbats, I mean, he was okay at the time, I guess. I mean, if you look about what the 90s were about, 90s were always about something newer, different, and better.
Mm-hmm.
But Batman's one of those classic, iconic characters, ones that you really don't want to mess with too much. And I guess by having Asbats in there, I mean, me personally, after reading the storyline, was a freaking nut job, man.
Well, he was, yeah.
I was like, what, 8 years old when this came out? So I had, honestly, it was just beyond me. Mm-hmm. But I could appreciate what they tried to do. They tried to shake up Batman, you know, a lot by having his back broken by Bane, and having Tim trying to find a new replacement for Batman, and having him fail in that aspect. And having, you know, John Paul Valley come in and be, you know, first Batman, then Asbats, because he feels that Batman was just too soft. It was just overwhelming, I think, for me.
Well, go back to it today. Let's say, if you were to read it today, for the first time, cold, do you feel you would feel any different about reading it? Because obviously you do have an attachment to the characters now. I mean, if this were to happen today, and it hadn't happened then, how do you think you'd be feeling about it?
I'd be pretty freaking pissed off, actually, now, I think. Because it was just, to me, I think it would be unnecessary now. I mean, we have such a strong character in Batman now. We have the building of Batman now. We have him trying to be a better person now. We have him just trying to do so much with his life now, instead of just being, you know, isolated from the rest of the team, to have Batman become the uber dick that he was before.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, the going, kick ass, take names, hand out lollipops, and yell out lollipops. It's just beyond me, I think. I mean, that's really not what a hero is supposed to be. A hero is supposed to be someone you can look up to. I couldn't look up the freaking Asbats.
Well, you could look up the freaking Asbats. The only problem is you'd be at his feet.
Yeah, be then pulling home freaking blood.
Yeah, and that's not a good way to look up to somebody.
No.
Because chances are you're not going to be conscious much longer.
No, not at all.
Well, I'm going to ask the same question here to Brent, actually. If you were to read this for the first time today, and 7-year-old Brent had never said, wow, cool armor, would you be thinking about Asbats any differently than you do today?
Today, like, as he's had all these same stores and we've rebuilt them?
Yeah.
Or as none of that ever happened?
None of those stories that happened back then happened, if they were happening today.
But he still had been rebuilt?
But he'd still been rebuilt, yes. Yes, if there was an opportunity where, you know, Batman's back got broken today and Asbats came in and replaced him, how'd you be feeling?
Yeah, I might not like it. Okay. Because he's just been rebuilt recently. Mm-hmm. But if he hadn't been, like, rebuilt and restructured, basically the way he's been today, then I still might be receptive to it. But, you know, the way they put it out then was, like, it's going to be for the long term. They didn't say that there was, like, any end in sight, I don't think. So, I mean, I don't know. I'd still read it, but I don't know if I'd enjoy it as much. I think the kid in me enjoyed it a lot more than the adult in me might have if it was coming out today.
Well, the way I feel about it is pretty much the same way that Raph felt about it, that Batman is not the Punisher, and he never will be the Punisher, and Asbats proved that. I mean, to have a Batman that's willing to kill, that's not the type of character that the DC Universe needs, that the Justice League needs, that Robin needs, that Gotham City needs. They need somebody who's willing to go only to a certain point to ensure that these people at least try to get rehabilitated. Because there have been, as we're seeing now in the Batman books, a lot of his heroes do end up sort of rehabilitated for a while until one writer comes along and says, I don't want that anymore, he's evil again. But, you know, I mean, the point is that he is willing to give these people a second chance, you know, to get rehabilitated in Arkham, to put them away from society, and, you know, hopefully they learn their lesson the next time around. If you just go ahead and kill them, they're not given that chance. That's not what Batman's about. And I don't think he'll ever really be about that.
Well, I think he served a good purpose for the Batman mythos. Mm-hmm. He showed that Batman's not the Punisher, obviously. And he showed what killing could do to a person. Uh-huh. Like, well, not really to a person because the Punisher's still whacked up in the head. But, I mean, Jean Paul Valley was brainwashed with all that system stuff before. The killing and, went against Bruce's teaching. So he's kind of having that inner struggle of he's Batman, he's not supposed to kill. But at the same time, he's Azrael, the angel of death kind of thing. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I think it helped the Batman mythos showing what a Batman shouldn't be. Rather than Batman's not the Punisher. It gave Batman a way of doing things, not a new way of doing things, but it gave him an example of what not to do. You know, you learn from your mistakes kind of thing.
And it's kind of funny.
And I think Bruce saw that. So, like, that when Bruce has to go away or whatever, if he chooses a new Batman, he's going to say, I'm not going to choose somebody new, I'm going to choose somebody close. And he did that. He chose Dick, which was, you know, Dick was not going to be Batman. We saw that with Prodigal.
Yeah. And it's actually kind of interesting how before he went away in 52, we were seeing a Batman that was looking more and more like Jean-Paul Valley. You know, a lot of his limitations that he used to have as a hero were not there anymore. This was not a friendly person. This was not somebody who was willing to trust people, and this was certainly not somebody who was willing to give people a second chance. Everybody was out to get Batman in his head before he went away in 52. And he left Gotham City to Harvey Dent, somebody who he had given a second chance, which once he gave his real, you know, once he started his rehabilitation path, he would have never given Harvey Dent any sort of a second chance if this was still paranoid, oh shit, everybody's going to get me Batman, you know?
Harvey proved himself in the Hush storyline in Batman's eyes.
Yeah.
You know, it came through for him at the end there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he lost Batgirl. Good job.
Well, you know, the Batgirl thing, I think, is more Batgirl's fault than his.
Yeah, that's true. She let himself get manipulated by Death Douche. I mean, Deathstroke.
Yeah. And at the same time, though, I mean, you got to realize that everybody who was around to help Batgirl was not around then. I mean, Oracle was off doing her own thing, you know, not getting married to Dick. I'm still annoyed about that. And Robin was off with Batman. So you just had Batgirl there alone again. And this is somebody who, you know, had lost most of her family. And for that part, most of her family were sort of evil bastards. So, of course, she's going to draw towards somebody like Deathstroke, who was offering her, quote unquote, another way. and leadership that nobody else was offering her at that time. So it makes sense to me that she would drift that way.
Yeah, it does make sense, and I don't think Bruce ever viewed her as part of the Batman family, like a true part.
I don't know. I mean, there was that thing in the Batgirl annual where it was I think they were both under the influence of a drug, and like Batman understood that the only way to actually communicate with Batgirl at the time was through violence, because that's all she had ever known. And the fact that he actually got that means that he had to have a close understanding with her. I mean, I think he does. I don't think he feels responsible for what happened to her, but I think it does hurt him, though, that she did go off and join the League of Assassins again, and that she was manipulated by Deathstroke.
I think it hurts Robin more than Batman, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Bruce ever viewed, like, yes, he could have had a kind of a close connection. I won't say relationship, because really the only people he has relationships with are Dick and Barbara and Tim
and
Superman and Alfred, yeah. But maybe he had a close connection or like acquaintance-ness or something. But since he didn't choose her to be Batgirl, I don't think he viewed her as part of the Batman family. Like the same way that he didn't view Huntress as part of the Batman family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's actually a good point. Let me actually mention Batgirl in general here. I mean, as a replacement for, well, a Batgirl that stopped being Batgirl under circumstances most people in the comics industry, well, in the comics life, don't end up stop being a character like this. I mean, well, she didn't choose to stop being Batgirl. She got crippled by the Joker, Barbara Gordon. And for years, there wasn't another Batgirl until all of a sudden, here comes, you know, Ms. Kane, ready to go here. I'm not sure whether or not the Bat Universe really ever really accepted her because of the memory of Batgirl that was left behind. I mean, she had shoes to fill.
Which Kane are you talking about, though?
Well, that would be Batgirl, right?
Cassie.
Yeah, Cassie Kane.
Bat Kane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the other one, Batwoman, we could mention quickly, because I don't know if that really is much of a legacy hero, because there wasn't a Batwoman to replace her in the current continuity. But, yeah.
So there was Huntress Batwoman for a little bit during No Man's Land. That's about it, though.
Yeah, very.
She was
very
Batgirl, true. Though.
Yeah, she was Batgirl.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, going to Cassie Kane, was she ever truly accepted by anybody in the Batman universe? I mean, other than possibly Oracle?
Robin, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that doesn't say much, because they're both young heroes. Of course, they're going to relate to each other, but you have to have the older heroes accept you as well, or else you're not going to be in a very happy place. You know, you have to have somebody be a mentor, not somebody your same age.
Well, to be fair, I mean, Dick's not around. Jason Todd's dead. Bruce is too busy trying to, you know, completely control Gotham and put it under his heel, so...
Yeah.
It's not really, yeah. She didn't really have an option. She wanted Bruce's attention. You could tell that throughout her series, but he would just, like, he would give it to her every now and then. It wouldn't. I mean, she had her own freaking bat cave at one point. Not really a bat cave, but like a mini, like, compound. She couldn't even go to the regular bat cave. It's like, what the hell?
It was the bat compact.
Yeah, she was just tossed away. Like, she's tossed aside. Yeah, you're part of us. Go over there now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go.
Yeah, she had a bat minivan and, you know, the bat swimming pool, they gave her that. Translation to sewer. And
the bat Winnebago?
Yeah, the bat Winnebago. There we go. The bat Volkswagen bus.
Well, I mean, I think part of the failure there is that if she was so close to Barbara Gordon, eventually, right?
Yeah.
Am I assuming correct here?
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. that is correct. They actually did have a mentor thing going on for a while there. She was actually being trained by her.
Then why didn't Barbara make her like a full-time part of the Birds of Prey, where she could have other female role models like Black Canary, you know, and I guess that was it for a long time. Well, but like Black Canary, and then maybe she could have hooked up with the Titans somehow or Young Justice. I mean, there are other ways that could have gone for Cassie Kane, but unfortunately, nobody really looked at her as part of the family.
Well,
I mean, even Tim didn't bring her into Teen Titans at all.
Yeah, well... Call me crazy. I mean, I could be wrong on this, but I am almost positive I remember Batgirl actually turning down a membership in the Birds of Prey at one point. I think this was the case, because, again, this was before I started reading Birds of Prey, but I'm almost positive I remember hearing something about that once. Do any of you know that for certain, or am I just grasping a straw?
Must have been really early. Must have been really early because I don't remember reading that. I've been reading it for the past 3 years, so okay. I don't know everything about Birds of Prey.
I'm gonna actually look up Batgirl's thing here and see whether or not that shows up. So 1 second. Yeah, you know what? Actually, looking at her thing here, yeah, she was never actually offered any membership into Birds of Prey, which is kind of weird. You would think that would have been one of the first things. Yeah, it says right here, after spending the next 10 years homeless, beating herself up mentally over what she'd done, Cassandra came to be one of Oracle's agents in No Man's Land Gotham. That's the only thing. It seems like she was an agent then, but never a true Birds of Prey agent, which you would think would be the next step, wouldn't it?
She's the gopher for the Bat family.
Yeah.
That bitch.
I mean, she...
Yeah, Cass, I need a coffee. Yeah, thanks. It's like, you're killing machine.
Number five, please.
Oh.
Hold on, let me rotate the carousel.
Well, I mean,
love
she...
that.
Well, she even went undercover for Batman and Justice League Elite. I mean, she went undercover as Kasumi. And, I mean, nothing really ever happened from that. But and yet Batman trusts her to do that. But, again, no team says, hello, would you like to be a part of us?
She's too special for teams.
I guess. I mean, I kind of remember her being with one of the Titans teams for a very short time. But that's the last I really remember her being in anything. And I could even be wrong about that. I mean,
well, Titans East, is that what you're thinking of?
Well, yeah, the Ray Palmer Titans?
Titans East was later on. You know what? It might have been the Ray Palmer Titans, actually. Yeah, that might actually be it. In fact, if anybody knows more about Cassandra Cain and wants to perhaps fill us in on that, just leave a comment on the forums on this episode post, because I would like to know more about her, other than the fact that
she was... Or leave us a voicemail.
Yeah, or leave us a voicemail, exactly. Yes, and I'll give you the voicemail number later on. But yes, please, leave us a voicemail. That would be nice. That would be super. It would be very nice of you. Please do so.
Stephen Hawking, I'm talking to you. You want a voicemail?
Whatever do you mean? I do not want a voicemail from Stephen Hawking.
So, yeah, moving on from DC, Marvel had a whole bunch of these legacy heroes back in the 90s.
Oh, God, yeah.
When one day they woke up and decided, you know what? All of our characters are tired. Let's do something about that. Let's give Thor a beard. And let's call him Eric Masterson now. Let's have it be some dude with the Thor powers. Were you guys a fan of Eric Masterson? I actually really dug those issues. Because my favorite part of it was the fact that Thor didn't talk like "thou ist art Thor" anymore. He had a regular, normal accent, which was very easy to understand.
Is that the biker jacket Thor?
Yeah.
That would be biker jacket Thor, yes.
I like the biker jacket. Just like I like the armor.
Well, no. I mean, he did seem a lot more down to earth with a human host inside of him, because that's actually pretty much what it was. The powers of Thor, you know, Thor was still sort of inside of Eric Masterson. Just like how, you know, Thor had a human alias, this was a human taking on a Thor alias, pretty much. It was the other way around. And it did work pretty well. I mean, he was in the regular Avengers for a while, which proves he was actually, you know, pretty good in his role, and eventually became Thunderstrike. But what are you guys' thoughts about Thor becoming more human? I mean, that's sort of what's happening to him now with Ohio and all that. But you know, this was
Omaha,
wherever Omaha. The hell it is. But I mean, yeah,
Oklahoma. Wrong again.
Omaha, Oklahoma, Ohio. One of those
Oklahoma,
where the wind comes sweeping down the plains. Yeah, I mean, did you guys enjoy that Thor when he was around? Did you guys read it back then? That's probably the best question before I even ask about it. I mean, do you guys remember that Thor at all? Raph, do you remember him?
Yeah, you know what's funny? I always said that I started reading comics starting with The Death of Superman, but I actually read a few Marvel books when I was like 6 or 7. That's when he Thunderstrike came along. Not Thunderstrike, Eric Masterson came along, and he became Thor with the visor thing in front of his eyes and the beard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that I liked that Thor a lot, and then I kind of realized that he was I can't like I liked him back then, and I still sort of like him now, but I kind of see it was sort of a cheap gimmick, really. It was what it was. I mean, they didn't change him all that much. They gave you know, he's still Thor. But he's just human Thor now, which, you know, ooh, big difference. But I mean, I liked it then, and I still have fond thoughts of it. But now, I mean, you can do... I mean, they just rebooted Thor. It's the same thing, so...
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Again, the best part of it was the fact you didn't have Thou Art Thou. You know, he talked like a normal dude. I mean, was that one of the reasons why people couldn't get into Thor in the first place? Because he talked like a freaking Egyptian?
Yeah, I think so, because, like, he... From, like, all my other friends, I remember they used to, like... It's like reading... It's, like, really old English. Nobody understands it. I'm like, well, you know, I sort of understand it. Then again, I read a lot more than my friends did. So, Thor is really hard to... Especially when it sounds like a Shakespearean play. Yeah, it's a little hard to get into Thor. I mean, I'm happy that they decided to bring him... Because Straczynski said, you know, they didn't speak Old English during Norse times, when Thor would have existed. It was before any modern English that we have. So, yeah, I like that. It's either you do it the Old English way, which no one would understand unless they have a dictionary, or you just make him speak plain English, which that's what I liked about Eric Masterson, too. He was just a regular guy. I could relate to him, you know, like... Well, I couldn't relate to him because I'm 7 years old, but, you know, he's a regular guy. I think he was a construction worker.
He was, yeah. He was a construction worker.
Yeah, and then... Like he would slam down his cane at the construction site and he would just fly off. That was cool. I mean, with Dr. Blake, he would make an excuse to leave the hospital and then just he never did anything human as Dr. Blake. He was sitting in his office all the time and then the Avengers need me. Stamp my cane down. I'm Thor. It's more exciting to have Eric Masterson around.
Doctor, we're in the middle of a surgery. Where are you going? I need to get my cane.
I can't stand up.
But, sir, you've been standing perfectly fine this entire time without a limp. Will you
my leg's
up?
Going out.
Will you shut up and let me get my fucking cane?
Heal him with the power of the lightning. Oh, wait.
By the power of Freeskull?
Thunder, thunder, thundercats. Ho!
Yeah, Brandon, didst thou liketh thou Eric Masterson Thor?
I like Masterson, Captain Masterson, other than the strike.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. The other. You mean the son of Thunderstrike?
Yeah.
The one in the.
Yeah,
the
I never.
M2, MC2.
Yeah, MC2.
Yeah. I mean, I never really read Thunderstrike when he first came out. Mm-hmm. Again, my only real exposure was from Kevin Masterson, which I thought was a really cool character. But looking back on it, I mean, I'm looking at his page now, and he seemed to be like how a legacy character should be done. I mean, you have. Part of the old, part of the new, you mix it together. And most of the time when you do a legacy character, you take parts of both and you throw it on the wall and you see what sticks. Mm-hmm. And I think with Marvel, this is at the time they got a lot of things right in like the late 80s, in the early 90s. And that's why I think that he works so well.
And I mean, he was around for a while, and actually mm-hmm. Thor was selling better for a while with Eric Masterson on the title than the regular Thor. So, I mean, that's obviously job well done right there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brett, did you have any experience with Eric Masterson?
No.
Okay. Well, then
I do have a couple things to say.
Okay, go ahead.
Thor didn't speak regular English way back in Viking times. I don't even think they spoke English to begin with. So
they
I don't know.
Inuit.
They spoke an ancient form of English that no one could understand at this point.
Yeah. No, I mean, if Thor's going to be speaking any language, it should be like Norwegian or something, not Old English.
Now, question.
And second, I don't understand why the writers...
Would you seriously want to hear him speaking Norwegian inside of a comic book?
I want to learn Norwegian. I don't know.
It's cool.
Okay. And then the other thing... I don't know how they know how to write Old English since they don't speak it either. And Shakespeare's not that good of an example for Old English.
Hmm.
Well, maybe.
He's kind of the only example for Old English we have today, though.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no. I took an Old English class at Hunter. Old English is like complete old. Shakespeare's English is considered middling, like early modern English. There's a, what is it, Chaucer? Chaucer is considered Middle English, and Early English, like really basic English, it's so weird. I couldn't understand it. Like, I had to have a dictionary half the time to translate it. It's just bizarre. Mm-hmm. It's like a Norwegian language, basically.
Well, hey, would you
Thor.
Look at that? Hey,
Thor,
that Thor guy, I could have sworn
yeah,
from
well,
like
Beowulf. This like if you read the original Beowulf, that's Old English. That's like real Old English.
Where like the U's or V's and that sort of stuff.
It's not even like they use different letters. Like you know that one that's like, it's like it makes a TH sound. It's like it's a weird like it's a six with a line in it or something. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre. It has nothing to do with modern. Like, it has something to do with modern English, but, you know, it's so weird.
But not much.
Not much.
Okay. So, another character that a whole bunch of people enjoyed when he was around was, well, James Rhodes. And now he's back as War Machine. Thank God he's not wearing that purple armor anymore, because, God, worst fashion mistake of anybody's life is putting
he's
on
special.
Purple armor.
He's so special, though. He likes it a lot.
He's super. He's absolutely super. But, yeah, no, he's out of that. But once upon a time, he wore the Iron Man armor. A lot of people have forgotten that. He was Iron Man for a while. Even in The Avengers, he was Iron Man for a while. And, well, this is kind of easy to do when you have a suit of armor, because everybody else outside doesn't know that you're anybody else. You know, as long as you have the same voice synthesizer, you can be anybody you want inside of the Iron Man armor. But, you know, the comics were different because you had James Rhodes, not Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Do you guys like the idea of having somebody else inside of the armor? Because obviously you're going to have a different story, but you might have some fun telling a different story with that guy inside the armor. We'll start with Brandon.
I liked Rhodey a lot. My first actual experience with Rhodey was through the Iron Man cartoon.
Okay.
And that was, of course, when he was War Machine then. And then going back reading Force Works later on, and going reading, I think he was part of the Avengers West Coast, I think, also. I liked him a lot. He was actually a strong character. I like saying this term again, strong character, but, I mean, he really was. He was almost like a standalone character. He was like Iron Man, only without the alcoholism and, you know, the womanizing type of thing, you know. He was a military guy, and he brought, like, that whole sense of tactics and urgency to what to Iron Man.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm probably going to go based off more cartoons than what I know, but, like, didn't he also have, like, a fear of claustrophobia after a while, also from being in the suit too much?
Was that something that was actually in the comics also, Raph, or was that just in the cartoon? I forget.
I'm not 100%. It might just be the cartoons, because he's in Initiative, and I don't see any mention of that so far.
Okay.
All right, because I'm going to look him up on Wikipedia just in case.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, again, I like that because it gave, like, a fear to a character which you really didn't see a lot of. I just liked him overall. I mean, he was just a really freaking cool character.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, no, he was badass. He was very badass. And, I mean,
And he's from Philly also.
Yeah. So, amen to that. You like your Philly people, don't you?
Heck yeah.
Yeah, now, Raph, I mean, do you enjoy seeing somebody other than Tony inside the armor?
Yes, especially now. We need a new Iron Man more than ever. Oh, you douchebag. Oh. No, I loved Rhodey. Yeah, I loved Rhodey. I loved the idea of War Machine. Because, again, like with Batman, War Machine was a souped-up, more powerful version of Iron Man with a lot more offensive weaponry, and I thought that was so cool because, you know, it's the 90s, and I'm a 90s kid, so more pouches, baby, more pouches!
Like the old rules!
Well, also remember the fact that he was in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who, you know, does have that military background, and obviously he's going to go about being Iron Man differently than Tony Stark, the guy who designs armor, you know, and weapons, would, because he's much more of an offensive character than Tony is.
Yeah, I mean, like, Tony's the theoretical guy, and Rhodey is the practical guy. He was in a war with the Punisher, because theoretically the Punisher was also in the same. It was in Vietnam, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty. That war produced two really kick-ass superheroes, the Punisher and War Machine.
You know, I'd actually be okay with Rhodey getting back in the armor someday. You know, this is one of those characters that doesn't have to just be relegated to outside of the Iron Man armor. You know, he could be War Machine, he could be Iron Man. Either way, I'm still going to enjoy the character.
Yeah, he's a great character. They've really built him up very well since his War Machine days.
Yeah.
Or Iron Man days.
Well, for that matter, I mean, would you rather see Tony Stark off on the sidelines helping out Rhodey as Iron Man and have Tony Stark not be Iron Man for a while? Or would you just rather Rhodey continue down the road of War Machine that he is?
You know, to be honest, I thought that was what's going to happen because since Tony is head of S.H.I.E.L.D., I thought that they would, you know, protect him by having Rhodey take on the armor,
yeah,
and then do all the fighting as Iron Man and have Tony just, you know, sit at his desk and protect, because he's a valuable asset to S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
He's freaking head of S.H.I.E.L.D. He should have protected himself more, but instead he's going out there and leading the charge himself. I mean, Extremis or not, he's still vulnerable.
Well, that's the thing, though. With the Extremis, it makes it a hell of a lot easier for him to be everywhere at once.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I was hoping that they would have involved Rhodey more with Tony being the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., but, I mean, he's the leader of the Sentinel Squad that's guarding the X-Mansion. He's doing some training and initiative. I'm okay with him just making these little cameos, but if they featured him more, I'd be a little happier.
Brandon, you okay? You yes or no on him becoming Iron Man again?
Actually, I'm kind of torn. I mean, I guess you could say that Rhodey is the type of character where he could be either character. And again, like you said before, the thing about being in the suit of iron is no one sees your face.
Yeah.
And you have, it's only that voice which comes out of you. I mean, I like Rhodey as Iron Man. I liked him as War Machine also. But I like giving characters time to grow and develop on their own first before they flip-flop back and forth.
Yeah.
So right now, for the time being, I want to see Rhodey as War Machine, since that's how I've known him the most. I want to get time to build up that character again. And if he has to pick up the role of Iron Man, I don't want to be done, you know, haphazardly or just done for the sake of doing it. You know, I want a little subterfuge for the reason of why they're doing it, not just to have something, oh, he'll be War Machine and Iron Man. We'll sell more books that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that does make sense. Well, I mean, I could actually see him becoming Iron Man, you know, dropping War Machine, just because Tony Stark does not have enough time to be everywhere at once.
Oh, I thought he could, you know. What about those life model decoys?
Well, true, yeah, but he doesn't seem like a life model decoy type, Tony. You know, he seems like the type who would actually want to be at places where he's supposed to be. You know, as opposed to being Iron Man, he'd rather be on the, you know, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. side, rather than being Iron Man. It seems to be going towards that these days, you know, being in the politics more than being in the fights.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It kind of would make sense to put somebody else in the Iron Man armor. At least that's how I'm seeing it. So I don't know whether or not he's going to go that way, but time will remain on him. Spider-Man, very unusual legacy hero thing going on here, because you don't normally see the clone of somebody become the legacy hero. You know, you expect it to be a different character. Instead, they went back and said, Peter was a lot more fun back in the day, so let's just go with his funner, younger self and call him Ben Reilly. It's all good. That legacy is not one many people enjoyed. I was a fan of Ben Reilly. I was okay with him. But, you know, these days I'm okay with Peter, but, you know, back then I did enjoy him. Was Scarlet Spider a bad idea in the first place? I mean, was it something that they should have avoided, you know, going with Scarlet Spider and then eventually, you know, Ben Reilly becoming Spider-Man? Was that something that they really needed to be done in the first place? And we'll start off with Raph.
I actually like Scarlet Spider a lot, too. It just didn't work out for me after a while, because I thought, you know, what's the point of the past 30 years? Are you just going to retell the past 30 years of a story? I liked Scarlet Spider, but I guess, is it necessary? Not really, because, you know, you just threw out Peter Parker and you've got everything in turmoil now, and you're just trying to rebuild. And was it really, I mean, did people hate Peter Parker that much? Not really. I mean, I think it was more of an editorial decision than the fans crying out for a new Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they had left, if they bring back Ben Reilly in any way, shape, miniseries, Elseworlds, well, they don't have Elseworlds, but like in another form, and he's the Scarlet Spider, I wouldn't mind seeing that. But as for, you know, should he have taken the place of Peter Parker in permanent continuity? Not necessarily, but I'm not complaining about the story though.
Okay, Brandon, what about you?
I see Ben Reilly as like a refreshing time, like, of Spider-Man history. Like, it's just gotten so freaking confusing with, like, you know, 90 books out there. It's like, what, there was, like, Spectacular, Peter Parker, Amazing, Sensational, Web of Spider-Man, Spider-Man's Ass, all that good stuff. And it's like, it just brought back the whole fun thing of, you know, Spider-Man just doing this thing. And I kind of like the costume. I was really digging the costume with the sweatshirt.
I did like that, too, yeah. I also liked his Spider-Man outfit.
Yeah.
I mean, I and it looks really good on, you know, Spider-Girl. But it looked very good on Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those gentle redesigns. You know, it's one of those ones that wasn't, you know, nearly as much of a change as, you know, other heroes have gone through, like, for example, you know, Electric Blue Superman. Let's talk about that. But I mean, this was still the hero. It was still with enough like Spider-Man where you'd be able to, you know, if he was flying through the city, hey, that's Spider-Man.
I mean, also, I mean, it was just kind of a cool concept for a character because, you know, like you said before, very rarely do you see a clone actually become the next character.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really cool also because, you know, even though he was a clone, he was just so different from Peter Parker also. Mm-hmm. I think that's what he tried to do a lot also with how they wrote him, because they wanted me just like this completely different person from Peter Parker. You know, he was pretty much, he wasn't as much of a social outcast as Peter was. Although there weren't a lot of supporting characters in his books, he just seemed to be more extroverted than Peter, and he also just seemed to be a lot more, I don't want to say carefree, because he still had the whole "with great power comes great responsibility" mantra.
Yeah.
But he just seemed to be able to let loose more often than Peter would.
Less people died on his watch.
Yes,
that's a good way to put it, because this is the Peter Parker that we had, you know, a few years earlier, where, you know, before Gwen went kaput, before Captain Stacy, before any of that happened, this was the Peter Parker that you had. He was fun-loving, he was free, and, you know, while he did worry about his aunt and stuff, you know, he wasn't afraid that the next person he was going to meet was going to end up dead because of him.
Yeah, no, none of that, like, guilt and tension and crap.
Yeah, which is, again, something that Peter deals with on a regular basis now because of his freaking identity being released. But, you know, even back then, he did worry about that sort of stuff. Because of the whole clone thing, some people didn't like it because you were using the same character. Do you think it would have worked better had they gone with a traditional legacy hero, had somebody else with Peter's powers becoming Spider-Man, like they did later on when John Byrne reset the character? You had Maddie become Spider-Man for a while, even though technically it was Spider-Woman. But would it have worked better with a legacy hero as opposed to just, you know, Peter Light, as some people would consider Ben to be?
I don't know. I mean, Maddie Franklin was a good character. I mean, I liked her by herself. You know, I liked her Spider-Woman title for, like, with all two issues that lasted.
Yeah.
I remember the reboot, and it was, you know, saying, which one of these people was, like, Spider-Man? And you see the cover, and you see Spider-Man, you see, like, Peter Parker, and all, like, his family around him. And the thing with that was, it just came out of left field. I mean, I know they just had the Gathering of Five, I think it was.
Yeah.
And they just ended that volume of Spider-Man, but you didn't really get that sense of, you know, this is the world where Peter's no longer Spider-Man. And I think how they should have done it was how they did it up and away with Superman. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have him living his life, and you have him actually, you know, this gradual step of him just becoming Spider-Man again. And instead, you had, you know, three issues of Spider-Man, of Peter Parker not being Spider-Man, and you had the fourth issue of the big reveal that it was actually a girl, mm-hmm. and by the end of issue four, he's Spider-Man again. I mean, it just seemed like it was a forced legacy, I think.
Understand.
And that's probably why it didn't last as long.
Yeah, well, they didn't introduce her at all. You know,
no.
When you have the whole mystery, oh, who is this Spider-Man? What's going on? You know, that doesn't work nearly as well as, say, if you introduce a character, if you have them hand over the mantle,
mm-hmm.
and you go from there. Or if a character is dead and a new character comes along, that's another way to do it. With Peter here, he had his powers. He didn't know this character. All of a sudden, Spider-Man just shows up and it's not him. That's not the way you handle a legacy character.
It just seemed too forced and it seemed too fast. There was actually no grieving period for the character.
Yeah.
Or time of loss without the character. I mean, here it was. It was, well, I think, it was like 280-something, that Amazing ended.
Yeah.
And then they started over again. They renumbered it with number one. And there it is. And I think number one came, like, what, 3 months after Amazing ended?
Something like that.
And there was no real time for, like, you know, the shock of, like, you know, having Spider-Man around. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, if they would have picked up saying, oh, okay, this is what happened in the months or years, however long comic time is, without Spider-Man, mm-hmm. I think that would have been a lot better, because you would have got the sense of, you know, there's no Spider-Man now.
Sure.
And I think that would have made it a lot richer storytelling, because you can see all this, or what's done. You can see what's happening. when Amazing ended, you saw Peter Parker living in like Queens with Aunt May and MJ, and they were pretty much broke. By the time Amazing restarted again, you see what MJ as a supermodel living in a penthouse. I'm like, where the hell did this come from?
Yeah,
this wasn't what I was reading like 5 months ago.
Mm-hmm. It didn't seem right. And again, because the whole thing was rushed, you sort of knew that this was not going to last.
Because mm-hmm.
when you don't build up a character and you just force them into people's laps and say, that's Spider-Man now. No, seriously. No, we swear to God, that's Spider-Man. No, 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 don't look away. No, 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 don't drop the title. We swear. This is Spider-Man. Oh, where are you? God, all right, fine, Peter. Peter, Spider-Man, whatever. Just deal with it. That's what it felt like to me.
You know,
this was an arc where somebody else was Spider-Man. This was not, this is Spider-Man now. Live with it. If you don't like it, maybe he'll come back in a few years, but this is who you have now. That didn't feel like that to me at all. I mean, Rat, did you buy into the hype at all?
No, I kind of figured Peter's gonna be Spider-Man again by the second or third issue. I didn't. Yeah. I stopped picking up that book, actually.
Really?
Because I had nothing. It was, I don't know why. I think it was because it was my budget, first of all, because mm-hmm. you know I'm like 12, 13 years old, and then it was like, well, I already picked, I think chapter one was a bi-weekly book that came out.
Oh, chapter one was good.
Oh God, yeah, that was terrible.
That was John Byrne, right? And then it was chapter one, and then he redid, and then they did the Amazing reboot, right? That's how I'm remembering it.
Mm-hmm.
So I read chapter one. I wasn't a big fan of it. Then I read the first few issues of Amazing. I said, forget this. It's not him. Who the hell is it? And I don't really care because I know Peter Parker's still going to be Spider-Man by the end of this run, by the end of this, at this storyline. It was so obvious to me. And I'm 13 years old, and I just got into comics for like a year or two, and I already know this, so I just stopped picking it up. Yeah. I never finished it, so I didn't even know who Maddie Franklin was up until like right now.
Well, you know it's bad when Ben Reilly was better built to be Spider-Man than Maddie.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean... Ben Reilly was terrific. I didn't know who he was back then. I still liked him. And then I started reading the actual books, and I liked him a lot. Meanwhile, Maddie Franklin... you know what? I take it back. I do like Maddie Franklin because she's in Loners right now, and she's doing a great job in there.
She is, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's a good character. She's just to be written by the right people.
Yeah, I mean, it was nothing. I mean, two issues, three issues. It wasn't... I didn't even care at that point, so...
Yeah. I think, really, Spider-Man's one of those few characters where... He shouldn't have a legacy, I think. Or if they do a legacy, it's like he has to be someone really close to him. And that's why they did. I think it's for the decline, because he pretty much was Peter Parker. He had the same personality as Peter Parker. I mean, if you look at Spider-Man's always been about, you know, having like the worst luck ever. Mm-hmm. And you look at his life saying, "Oh, things are going good from now." But wait till the shit hits the fan. And that's why I think what Spider-Man should always be about. And that's why I think he's one of those few characters where a legacy really wouldn't work. Or like someone like Captain America, it's always about the ideal. Because, you know, that's what Captain America is. More than anything else, he's an ideal of a person.
Hey, you know, speaking of Captain America, there is a whole thing going on right now about, you know, there's no Captain America right now. Hey, Captain America's dead. What are we going to do? Are we going to get a new Captain America? What's going on? What's going to happen? Should there be a new Captain America? That's the burning question right now in Marvel Comics, because Iron Man offered it to, well, Clint, and he turned it down. Clint, of course, being Hawkeye. And, well, it's a good idea that he did, because the way that Tony was acting, you can tell that he just sort of wanted to just fill the shoes so that barely anybody would even notice that there was no Captain America anymore. And that's not the way to go about it. You know, you have to have a grieving period. And he was forcing Clint Barton into the role of Captain America. Eventually, and you know, he noticed it, and he went off and bit, you know, now he's Ronin and all that, and all's well with the world, but there still was no Captain America. Who in the Marvel Universe right now do you see filling the role of Captain America? Do you see
Echo.
Anybody inside of that costume?
Echo.
Really?
No, I'm joking.
just because I mentioned, all right, fine. Haha, we have our laughs, all right, yeah, okay, anyway, move on.
I'm sorry.
Well, no. The best thing about Echo is that she would try to look like a man again.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
She's quite mannish, man.
Uh-huh.
I think we're okay with no Cap. Leave him dead.
Do you want to see anybody at all, like, ever, as Cap?
No. No. the whole idea was a World War II idea, and just replace him with somebody now just seems dumb. And I hope he doesn't stay from the invaders or whatever.
No, he's not going to. He's not going to. That's just a story that's going on. I guarantee you he'll be gone after that. Because, for one thing, you'd be messing with the time stream so much by having him stick around.
Captain Marvel?
Oh, don't even kid, man. All right? There's no way in hell they're going to have, like World War One era... World War II era Captain America be in our time for more than, like, 5 minutes.
That'd be two captains that they pulled back from time to come back, you know. And maybe he could watch the Negative Zone Prison, too.
He'd be Captain Marvel America.
Yeah. Captain Marvel America. There we go. What a brilliant idea. I agree with that 100%.
In about 20 years.
I got it from Jeff Loeb's notebook.
Right, sure. Oh. All right, Brandon, yes or no on a new cap?
I say no right now. I mean, again, it's just too close to having Cap die. I mean, he died in, like, one of the most horrific ways ever for a superhero to die, being shot outside your own trial, through the chest, through the head, through the neck. And that's just pretty freaking bad. I'm sorry, someone must have wanted you dead to do that, to shoot you three times.
Yeah, somebody with this, like, red skull that's been trying to go after him for a while might have
exactly.
been dead, you know?
Dare I say an arch enemy of some sort, you know?
Nah.
Never happened. I think right now is just too new and too fresh in our minds. Because, you know, Captain America, his dying made freaking world news. Yep. It was so big, it made Stephen Colbert news.
Yes, yes. And anything that makes Stephen Colbert news, you know, is big.
Oh, yes, yes. Again, it was just this overhype of, you know, of Marvel saying, okay, we're going to do something radical, we're going to do something new, we're going to kill a hero, we're going to kill someone big, we're going to kill someone major, and they kill freaking Captain America. And you know what? If they replace him right now, I think Marvel will be dropping the ball big time. Because they're not letting this shock and awe value set in.
Yeah.
It'd be like making a new hero and having him die in the first issue, like Wonder Man.
Well, I mean, that would be like, for example, if they had just replaced Thor as opposed to letting him stay dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like that would be okay. You know, if he's gone for a year, 2 years, I'm okay with that. But no way in hell should there be a new Captain America like 3 months afterwards.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's just way too little time right there. Raph, are you a yes or no on Cap?
All right, I am a little bit both. Because I want to see Bucky put on that costume for just an issue or two and just fucking kick the Red Skull's ass in. That's just for that. But no, they can't replace Captain America they can't have a permanent Captain America anytime soon, because that just destroys all the hype and goodwill you built up with the death. I mean, the whole point is he's dead, he stays dead. For Bucky to put it on and kick some ass and then look at himself and realize he's not worthy or whatever, or he doesn't think he deserves it, and take it off, that would be fine. Or to do what Clint did is fine, but not a permanent cap.
If they're going to do anything, though, they have to get another character that has two first names to be Captain America. You know, like Roger Steve, or like, you know, like Bill Ryan or something like that. You know, he's got to have two first names. That's the way it rolls. You know, Steve
Murdoch
Roger,
Matthew.
I'm okay with that, you know. So I'm assuming you guys are all okay with the fact that Clint Barton is not currently Captain America, right?
Although he's taking a Captain America name, though. Nomad.
Well, yeah, but now he's... Isn't he Ronin, though, or something like that?
Oh, Ronin, whatever.
Yeah, Ronin, not Nomad. Nomad's the guy, the Bucky that just died.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah,
the Bucky replacement, yeah.
Ronin, I mean, since that's a cool name also, you know. Ronin, you know, it's all edgy and extreme.
With an X?
Just like...
And a dash.
Yeah, with the dash, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Just like the 90s.
Uh-huh, yeah. But, yeah, Raph, I'm assuming, yeah, as well, you're okay with Al Clinton being Cap?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I needed, it was cool to see. That's actually a great setup for him to be Ronin, you know. We know that he doesn't want to be Hawkeye. He tried being Cap, and he hated it, and now he's just Ronin. You know, that it's a nice little circle there.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Brent, you?
Yeah. Perfectly fine.
All right, cool. Would you rather be Hawkeye again? How about that?
I guess not, because Hawkeye's kind of done, right?
No, I think we let the new girl be Hawkeye. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Well,
the young Avenger.
Yeah, that's a legacy right now. Yeah, I mean, she's already being the legacy hero, being, you know, calling herself Hawkeye like she is.
Why not Lady Hawk?
Dark Hawk?
Oh, wait, never mind.
She-Hawk?
She-Hulk. Silverhawk.
How about let's not and say we did?
Yeah, let's do that.
That's a brilliant idea right there. All right, so yeah, so we're okay with no Cap right now. So if a Cap does return, should it be Steve Rogers?
Zombie Steve Rogers.
Not even zombie Steve Rogers. I mean, should we go without a Captain America until Steve Rogers eventually comes back from the dead?
Like the Liefeld return?
Yes, pretty much. Minus the boobs, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, for all the bad that Liefeld did with his return, it's actually not a horrible read. Mm-hmm. I say that with a grain of salt. But, I mean, like, it was kind of cool seeing, you know, Rogers retraces not his origins as Captain America, but his roots as Captain America, finding out why he's a symbol of why he actually is a symbol and why people need Captain America. I mean, I think that's what Captain America needs to deal with now. The real reason the Civil War happened was only because Captain America couldn't give up his World War II notions.
Yeah.
Even though he's been through God knows how many years of horrible tragedies in history ever since then, mm-hmm. he's still holding on to, he's still that man lost in time. He's still that man who's stuck in the 1940s in his head living in the 2007 world. I think if he does come back, he needs to somehow rebuild himself and find himself to be a more integral part of the world now, and how he can use what he's learned and how he can say, well, my death wasn't in vain because right now things are a whole clusterfuck of what's going on. See, that he needs to find out he actually is integral to himself.
Okay.
That Captain America is not just an ideal. He is Captain America. And also as a way that he can live his life and be Steve Rogers at the same time.
Makes sense to me. Yeah, and I mean, that is kind of hard to do when everybody knows you're Steve Rogers, though.
Yeah.
I mean, Brett, I'm sure you do believe that he'll come back from the dead eventually.
Yeah, probably. Unfortunately.
You'd rather him not? Like, ever?
Yeah.
Wow.
Ooh.
Firm words right there. But I mean, this is the comic books we're talking about here, man. I mean, people don't stay dead.
Yeah. I'd like him to stay dead for at least a couple of years, as long as Thor was dead, maybe longer.
Okay. That I'm okay
with. How long was Thor dead for?
About 2 years.
Okay, yeah. I can do
a little longer than that.
Well, yeah, well, when did this assembly happen? 2003. All right, so 3 years.
2003, 2004, yeah.
Yeah, so about 3 years, which is better than I thought it was going to be. I felt like I'd wake up in the morning and Thor would be back, and he'd be like, hello, I made breakfast.
Well, it's not his fault, because Miller and someone else were supposed to be on the book. And then Miller bowed out, and then he did Civil War, so it's not really... He could have been back sooner.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he wasn't.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, it makes more sense... it makes more sense for him to be gone so you can remember he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not for him to just show up one day with, you know, like I said, you don't want him waking up making you pancakes. That's not the way it works.
I mean, that's what I think DC got right when they killed off Jason Todd. I mean, they put a moratorium on his character saying you cannot use him anymore.
Yeah.
And now they kind of let it go because they needed him for stories for storytelling sake, so they say. But, I mean, he wasn't around for 20 years, almost.
Yeah.
And you knew that he existed at one time, and you knew that he was there, but you didn't need him, really.
Agreed. Agreed.
Same with Barry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, definitely with Barry. And I mean, the Flash legacy, I mean, that's an entirely other episode, you know, that we could go into. To give it like 5 minutes would not do it justice. But I mean, the Flash legacy is the biggest legacy hero thing there is in pretty much anywhere. And I mean, everybody's kind of happy that there is no Barry. I mean, at every single convention, when anybody even suggests, because eventually somebody goes up there and says, well, when are you bringing Barry back? Nothing but booze from the entire crowd. You know, people want this character to stay dead.
It was a death that meant something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brett, as a fan of DC Comics, I know you're not that familiar with Barry because you're not that familiar with The Flash, but, I mean, I'm sure that you would like him to stay dead, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right. I'm glad. I'm glad, sir.
What about Green Lantern as a legacy?
Well, yeah, actually, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I was actually going to roll back into DC at, like right after that anyway. That's a legacy that's kind of hard to actually classify as a legacy, because you have to classify, I guess, the Earth Green Lantern as a legacy.
Alan Scott?
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess start off with Alan Scott, and then from there you go on to the other Green Lanterns out there in the world, because his Green Lantern is not even the same Green Lantern, right?
Well, it's the part of it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I got you. All right. So I guess we start with Hal Jordan and we go from there. Is it the fact that that there were more than one Green Lantern active on Earth not make it a legacy?
Before Hal went nuts, I would say it's not a legacy, but considering that after Hal destroyed the entire Corps, destroyed the Guardians, and eradicated anything Green Lantern, and I think the true legacy is Kyle.
Okay.
Kyle's a legacy. Hal's a legacy. John Stewart and Guy Gardner, they're not really legacies. They're reserved Green Lanterns. In case Hal went down, they were there to back him up. But even throughout the Corps, I mean, if you guys are reading the Sinestro Corps War, I mean, when a Green Lantern dies, someone succeeds them. There is a sense of legacy, but
yeah.
definitely Kyle. If when you're talking about legacy and Green Lantern, it's definitely Kyle and Hal. Those are the two most representative, because Hal was the greatest, and he was a legacy from Abin Sur, and Kyle basically rebuilt the entire Corps, and he kept the Corps going while it was gone. So those are the two most important characters when it comes to legacy.
And, you know, we're all young here, so I'm assuming everybody on this panel right now likes Kyle better. Am I right about that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's tough for me. I like them both so much.
I mean, I can relate with Kyle a lot better, because he's been what I've known. But I've been reading this Green Lantern, the Geoff Johns Green Lantern, and it's a tough one now.
But, yeah, I mean, Hal's good and all that. It's just that it's another one of those legacies where I would have been okay if they just moved on.
I'll go with you right there.
Yeah. I mean, like, just like the case with... I would have been okay if Rhodey stayed Iron Man forever. You know? Because, again, that's an interesting character that really didn't have to go back to Tony if he didn't really want to. With Green Lantern, you'd moved on, you know, for 10 years. 10 years. People forget that it was that long. That, in fact, even longer than that, even. Because when was Zero Hour? What, like, 96 or something?
Four,
like that?
Well, yeah.
96,
okay.
96, yeah.
Before that, he was Green Lantern for at least a year. I know that. He's been in the DCU. Kyle has been in the DCU for at least like 12 or 13 years now.
Yeah.
And to suddenly say that 12, 13 years later down the line, you're the only Green Lantern, not anymore. Hal's back. Sorry, you're not even the best Green Lantern on Earth. Hal is back. Was a bit of a cop-out.
Well,
to me at least.
I don't think it's so much seeing them as the best. I mean, they're all good at really what they do. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the most part, even though Guy's got a messed up head, he really is the heart of the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like the human Kilowog, pretty much.
Yeah.
He's like the one who rallies the troops, who gets everyone all together. John is the most technical-minded Green Lantern. Hal is just the bravest one there is. I mean, brave doesn't make you the best one. It just makes you... You know, the one who can go out in the front lines the best. Well, who goes in the front line the most.
Because Kyle is the most creative Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Because that much you can say. Because he's the only Green Lantern, from what I know, that is an art student.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he still goes by the idea that, you know, once he creates something, he doesn't create it again. Because he has that artistic mentality that's important for creating Green Lantern stuff.
I mean, look at, like, when he first started being Green Lantern. I'm going to say, like, in the second or third year of being Green Lantern. Like, the way they drew his constructs that he made using the ring were just so inventive.
Yeah.
And it was always like, you know, he would never just draw a gun. He would draw, like, this, like, giant space laser to go on his whole entire arm. And I think that's, like, again, it's not about being the best. It's about having good aspects in every single Green Lantern, which is what makes him the core.
I agree with that, yeah. Raph, what were you going to say earlier?
Oh, it's not really a cop-out because, all right, Hal Jordan is the greatest, most legendary Green Lantern. He was already considered the greatest Green Lantern when the Green Lantern Corps was still around the first time.
Yeah.
But Kyle is the torchbearer. Kyle is probably the most powerful one because he doesn't need a ring. He's Ion. He has more power than Hal in terms of sheer power.
Yeah.
And he's also the one that restarted the whole Corps. So my only problem with it was, why didn't you, if Kyle has had 12 years of history, because it happened a while back, it didn't happen this year.
Yeah.
He had so much history, why the hell did you just shoot him off into a little miniseries instead of giving him his own book like you gave Hal? I mean, that's my only problem with it. I mean, I always thought of Kyle and Hal sort of as like semi-equals.
Yeah.
I mean, one's more experienced, but the other one's more powerful. Mm-hmm. And the other one's definitely in the future.
Yeah.
But it's like, you're giving Hal the book, and you just threw Kyle away for a while, and then, oh, let's make a miniseries, by the way. It's like, it wasn't fair to him, I think. He should have gotten his own series.
I agree with that entirely. My reasoning behind this is the fact that, and again, if you're a fan of Hal Jordan, I can understand that. I'm not going to, you know, say anything against you for being a fan of Hal Jordan. And most people are just fans of Hal Jordan. They're not obsessive fans of Hal Jordan. It's the obsessive fans of Hal Jordan that made Hal Jordan be the star of Green Lantern again. They kept poking at DC, having their, like, bring back Hal things, like, over and over again. That finally they were like, all right already, he's back. Jeez, what do you want to do? And because of that, Kyle lost his book. He was out there, not in the Green Lantern book anymore. He's in Green Lantern Corps, which is great. And he's got Ion, which is also great. But again, that was a miniseries. And he had a Green Lantern book for years. So you're casting him off to the side.
Yeah, that was my problem with everything. That was, I mean, but other than that, I thought it was okay. I mean, you know, he's not second fiddle to Hal in terms of the core status, but in terms of the reader status, he is second rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brett, do you feel he got casted off?
Yeah, definitely. I was really enjoying his book till it ended, basically.
Okay, all right, cool. Let's actually move on to the DC heroes that just came into the limelight. Specifically, the brand new Blue Beetle, brand new Atom, and the other characters that were just introduced, Firestorm. They're all, well, to put it lightly, ethnic. You know, they're not the typical white superhero anymore. They're trying to branch themselves out, which is good. I like that. They seem to be much more energetic and creative towards making these legacy heroes work. I'm all right with that. But the question is, have they gotten a firm footing in the DC universe yet? I mean, do you feel like they belong in the DCU more than their originals yet? We'll start this off with Brent here, because he hasn't really had much to put into more than past the yes and the no in the past couple of minutes. So let's have a nice long answer from Brent here.
What do you want me to start with?
Just start with, you know, do you feel like they have a firm footing in the DCU? Blue Beetle, Atom, so on.
I think Blue Beetle does. I really like the way they're handling his new direction, and it's totally separate from anything else that has gone before. Atom, I think he's going to get replaced.
Okay.
I can see him going once they find Ray Palmer, or being overshadowed if Ray Palmer becomes like a mentor thing.
You can't see two Atoms coexisting?
Not really.
Okay.
Somebody's got to die, I think.
Okay. Firestorm?
Yeah, I think he's pretty well established. I mean, he had 30 issues or something of his series.
Something like that, yeah.
And the other one's dead, so sure.
Yes, but again, that doesn't mean anything in the comic book world, man. He could just be in a very heavy sleep.
He's stuck in the Matrix.
Oh, whoa!
Matrix is around you, Neo.
Whoa!
The Firestorm Matrix guys. Jeez.
Do you feel the DCU is better off with these ethnic heroes than with the plain old whiteys?
I think so. I like the stuff that's in the. The Blue Beetle book's the only one that I'm really reading, but I like the stuff that has put it in there that's made it a little different. I think the family structure is a little different. He's certainly closer with his parents than anybody else. You know, I guess so.
Okay. Well,
I don't think it adds to the characters, but I don't think it detracts from them.
It makes sense. Yeah. I want to turn to Ryan Choi's biggest supporter here, Raph. I know you enjoy the fact that there's finally a good Asian hero in the DCU.
Yes! He very good. He very good long time. Yeah, very good. I'm going to turn to stereotype voice. So, yeah.
Raph Zuhu, ladies and gentlemen. You can find him on Geese Unite and no longer on Comic Timing because I'm scared of him. But no, in all seriousness, though, good idea to make it ethnic, and at the same time, are they fitting in?
Okay. The thing is I've read 2 out of 3. It's Atom, Firestorm, and Blue Beetle. So,
yeah.
You know, what's funny is I think Firestorm was the first one out of the three, right?
Yes.
To me, he's the least relevant of the three.
Agreed.
Like,
yeah.
It doesn't even matter. Like, you could put Ronnie Raymond there or Jason Rush in there. It wouldn't even matter to me. And this is no offense to Jamal Igoe. You know, I love that run, but what has DC done with him lately?
Nothing.
What is DC? Nothing. And you know what? They could just bring Ronnie Raymond back. No one would even notice.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, I think the safest one is Blue Beetle, and I really am enjoying Blue Beetle, and I'm so happy he's going to be in Teen Titans. He's going to get much more exposure.
Yeah.
And that's a sign that this legacy character is here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
in terms of the Atom.
If Geoff Johns has anything to say about it, Blue Beetle's going to be gone because he's bringing Ted Kord back. And he brought back Hal Jordan, too.
Yeah, well, I'm iffy about that, too, because, like you were saying about the Atom, like, if they do bring... I think they can bring Ray Palmer back, but I don't think he's going to be the Atom again. I think he's just gone through too much. And if he's the key to saving the multiverse, I think he's going to... After Final Crisis or whatever, I think he's just going to be so... He's just going to be beyond that Atom role. I mean, he went from being a superhero to having his wife kill all of his best friends, loved ones, to knowing the secrets of the multiverse, and he's going to go back to being the Atom. I don't see it.
You know what I see him being, actually? Dean Palmer. I actually see him coming back as a dean at the college.
Yeah.
So that he can associate with Ryan and have something to do in his life, you know, still be there as a mentor character, but just, you know, hang up the belt for a while and just be a dean.
Yeah, I mean, I think all three legacy characters are safe, but I think the ones that are safest are definitely Atom and Blue Beetle, because Atom is not doing as great as it should. People are trying to rally behind it. You know, yeah. Mike Norton's on it. We rallied behind it. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely, I think, the worst selling of Gail Simone's books, I think. I'm behind that book, and I would really love to, I think Ryan has built up in a nice little group of friends that kind of help him out, and I'm really attached to Ryan right now. Asian or not, I really like the book.
Well, all I have to say is, welcome to the city on my dog's ass.
Yeah, that was great. I love the big head. I love the big head. Everything is destroy. Everything is destroy. I love that guy.
Potsy or death. Tuscadero, sisters or destruction.
I love that. I really think that they're here to stay, but they really need to step it up with Firestorm, and they just really need to do something with the other two too, because I need to know they're going to be here a year from now, so that I can invest in their books and I can read them and enjoy them without having to worry. Oh, is Ted Kord coming back to replace him? Is Ray Palmer going to come back to replace Ryan Choi? So I'd rather have some security right now.
Well, with Blue Beetle, I could very well see Ted Kord and Blue Beetle associating with each other perfectly fine. Because, for one thing, Blue Beetle never really used the Scarab. The Scarab wasn't not a part of his shtick. It was there, but he wasn't using it any of its powers. So I'd be perfectly okay with, you know, Jamie still having the Scarab being Blue Beetle in his own book, and have Ted Kord Blue Beetle off on adventures with Booster. I'd be okay with that.
Blue and gold.
Well, if Ted Kord was always in the time stream.
Well, yeah, that would be even better. Yeah, because he'd be able to just be on his ship, not have to worry about, you know, any of the time misplacements or anything like that. Let's actually turn to Brandon here and have his take on the heroes.
I'm going to agree with most of what's been said. I do agree that the two safest characters are going to be Blue Beetle and Atom. I mean, I didn't read much of Firestorm. I think I read, like, one issue, and that was in the store. And, like, to me, as an African-American, he didn't really feel black at all. Uh-huh. He kind of, like, I mean, he looked black. And I bet if the comic had actual sound to it, he'd probably sound black.
Yeah.
But the way he kind of spoke didn't really, to me, seem like it was African American. Exactly. I mean, like, in the first issue, you saw him, like, well, the first issue he was doing a drug run outside of Detroit, I think it was.
Yeah.
And, like, that seemed to be more of the urban influence, but I think over time the book just kind of lost that, I think. And with the Atom, I love the Atom. Actually, it's one of my new favorite books out of Brigade of Worlds. And it just seems to be like, it's the Atom and like the MacGyver team. It's like the best combination ever, I swear. And it works, that's why. I mean, like, you have Ryan Choi, and you have Panda, and you have all these other guys who help him, and it's like, it seems like he's got like this whole support team with him.
God damn it. Now I want to see Richard Dean Anderson with an Atom belt.
Richard Dean Anderson playing Ray Palmer in the Atom movie.
Of course, yeah.
Okay. And, like, I think that's why it works so much, because it's such a quirky book, and I love the way that Gail Simone writes the Atom. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's taking off. I think it's taking off a Grant Morrison premise.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it's going to be wonky out the ass already because it's Grant Morrison.
Well, yeah.
And the fact that Ivytown's this quirky town, this college town, which is so messed up beyond belief. I think that's what makes the book work so much for the Adam. It's not so much about him being an Asian American for me so much. That just helps influence the character a lot more on his decisions. And I love the fact that when his father came to town, that he really saw that side of his heritage about, you know, about making his ancestors proud, people who came before him, making them proud. Now moving on to Blue Beetle, I think Blue Beetle is the only one I haven't had any exposure to, really.
Okay.
I read him in Infinite Crisis, and I think what makes him work is that he's just a freaked out teen in an armor suit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why he works, because he's really discovering his powers himself. I mean, had Blue Beetle come along in like the mid '90s with Young Justice, I think he still would have worked then.
Uh-huh.
Because of the way he's being written. I mean, honestly, what's so hard to identify with about being a teenager and not knowing what you can do? I think we've all been there at least once in our lives.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And that's why he works. Not so much that he's a Latino living in Texas. Not so much that his name is Jaime Reyes, you know, who hangs out with his friends, you know, who does all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that he has these abilities. He doesn't know what all of them do, and that he's just trying to cope with it. And the fact that he's being accepted now by other heroes, because pretty much he just stumbles his way through to his success, it seems to work because the character seems so genuine. Like, his reactions to circumstances just seem so genuine to how I would react to other things.
Yeah.
Like, if I met Guy Gardner and his power ring started going crazy around me, what would I do? Honestly.
Run for your life?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he actually stays there and plants himself and tries to talk to him, you know, it's like saying, oh, I'm a big fan of yours, I'm a big fan of yours, you're so cool, while, you know, the guy's trying to kill him, I think it's just impressive. I mean, it's well-written stuff.
I used to read your comic all the time, I swear, no, don't hurt me, please, oh, God. One thing I want to ask you guys before we do actually wrap this up, actually, it's more like a three-parter, so I'll just ask it right now. I want to get your favorite legacy hero. Meaning, of course, it's a legacy hero that you like better than the actual original hero. I want to hear a hero that you would never want to see replaced, and I want to hear one that you think desperately needs to be replaced. And I'll ask those three right now, and I'll start off with Raph.
Okay, the legacy hero I love the most, I think, is... Gee, that's tough. I think I'll go with Wally.
Okay.
Because, I mean... You know, that's so tough because I really, they didn't give Bart a chance, and I really wanted to like Bart, and I loved Bart as Kid Flash, but I think Wally was the Flash I grew up with. Wally's the Flash right now, and I'm very happy with Wally, so I'm going to go with Wally. The one that I never want to see him change is any of the big guns.
Okay.
But specifically, like Superman, I do not want to see another Superman. It's impossible. You cannot give me another person who says, I am Superman. It's impossible. You can't do it. You can't do it. There's no one that can replace him.
Not even somebody who, you know, has like a cyborg arm or like really cool sunglasses.
Yeah, or a black guy in a suit. You can't do it. You can't do it. It's just impossible.
Hey, I still got that.
What about Mexican Superman? You know, I mean, he's awesome in all the conventions.
Oh, yeah, when there's Indian Superman from all those Bollywood movies who isn't that bad either.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that, man.
Hey, but seriously, like, black Superman.
Yeah, but you get my point. Like, you can replace Cap. Can you really replace Spidey? I mean, they tried; it didn't really work out. Can you, Batman? Maybe, but Superman, mm-hmm. Wonder Woman, not really. I mean, and the one they desperately need to replace is Penance.
Thank you.
Penance needs to go. Well, Penance needs to go.
Well, I mean, it's not even well. See, my question was more along the lines of, you know, ones that need to be replaced by other legacy heroes. What you're saying is you'd rather see a different Penance.
That's all right, fine. Let me change that then. Let me the one that needs to go. The one that needs to go the most. One that needs to be gotten rid of.
Although wait a minute, I just had to make this statement also. Penance is a legacy hero. Because there was a penance in Generation X.
Yeah.
Oh,
I like
her
better.
Really right.
But yeah, anyway, go back to who you think should be replaced.
Who should get out?
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of one. I can't. They're all pretty good right now. I mean, you know, Fire. The only one I don't really care. The Firestorm, I'm indifferent about. I wouldn't mind if he stayed this. Maybe the legacy character of being Scott's girlfriend. I want Jean back and get rid of Emma Frost. I mean, that's not really a legacy.
That's not really much of a legacy now. All right.
No. The one at Monster Legacy.
Let's just say that you're bowing out.
Yeah, I'll bow on the third one.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, Brent, give me your three.
Legacy character that I love the most, Tim Drake right now.
Okay.
That never to be replaced, Oliver Queen.
Mm. Oh,
he's
good
just
one.
Too funny. Okay. I don't like Connor Hawk. Needs to go.
Needs to go. Now, again, this could be a legacy hero that's already around, or it could be a regular hero that you think needs to be replaced.
Let's go with Connor Hawk. Get rid of him. He's extraneous.
Well, congratulations. You just made an enemy of Ian Levenstein.
Yeah, I love Connor, dude.
So do I.
Connor is the man. All right? That's
he's
all
so freaking cool.
Yeah.
Kyle and Connor, those are great crossovers.
Those were really good. Well, I actually just picked up a couple months back. I still had a chance to read it. That mega crossover they had between Robin, Batman, Green Arrow, and I think those were the three, actually, where they were.
Oh, with Ifa Shiva?
Yeah.
Oh, those are so good. Mm-hmm. And like Green Arrow is fighting Shiva, and like he's all beat up, and Robin stops by, and then Shiva stops, and she's like, "All right, next time." just because I trained you, Robin, it's okay. Yeah, I'll go. Mm-hmm. go now.
Yeah, that's.
Don't hurt me.
Yeah, and don't give me herpes anyway.
Oh, those are the days.
All right.
It's in my eye.
All right, character that I feel is probably the best legacy hero, Kyle. Hands down. Yep. You know I'm a huge Kyle fan, so I'm going to have to go with Kyle on that, all right? A character that I think should never be replaced. I was going to go with Superman, but because you mentioned Superman, I'm going to bow out on that. And I'm actually going to go with a character that probably most people would not even think of saying, considering that she has been replaced a few times, Wonder Woman.
Mm. Yeah.
They've tried and they've failed. Donna was a decent enough replacement for a while, but she wasn't nearly as interesting as Diana. Now, Donna...
She's too convoluted.
Yeah, Donna should just remain what she is and let Diana be Diana.
What is Donna anyway, though, now?
Donna is Troia, I think.
That's it.
I think she's still called Troia.
No, she's just Donna Troy, and she's wearing the Troia outfit.
Okay, so she's like Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Like how Jean Grey didn't have a code name for like the longest time.
Yeah, stupid.
All right. And characters, and a character that needs to be replaced. You know, I think at this point, after all of the BS that they pulled with this character, making him Monarch and all that, I'm going to go with Captain Atom. Because he's not even Captain Atom anymore, really. You know, he's Monarch. But we need a Captain Atom in the DCU. And I think you could definitely have somebody replace him, and it'd still be perfectly fine. Once Monarch goes off on his own thing, which I'm sure he probably will, and probably won't end up coming back as Captain Atom, get a new Captain Atom, make him a creative, interesting character, and I'll be fine with that. So, like I said, replace Captain Atom, get rid of the bastard. I'm done with him. Enough with the Monarch crap. Brandon, you're up.
All right. My favorite, I think, legacy characters of all time have always been the Slingers. And, like, you know, not many people remember the Slingers, but they were, like, offshoots of Spider-Man during his identity crisis.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, like, the reason they worked so well was because they weren't Spider-Man. That's why.
Yeah.
And, like, they all had their different personalities. And that's why I love them. But I think my favorite legacy character ever has been Tim Drake Robin. He's just such a good Robin. He's such a strong character. And I just like him as Robin, honestly. My least favorite one right now, gotta be Pence. I'm sorry. Bobby Baldwin. I like Pain. I'm all in S&M. That's, no, I'm sorry. It's not cool anymore. I'm sorry. SNM went out in the 90s. Just let it go.
Well, again, you're saying that he should be replaced by another penance by saying that. I think he should be just.
There should only be one penance, and the penance who is now known as Hollow should just take up the name again.
That's fine. Bye bye, man. Okay, cool.
Because honestly, that character, the fact that she was alone, the fact that she couldn't speak, the fact that no one could touch her without dying, mm-hmm. I think that's why she worked as a character from Gen X.
Yeah.
And the fact that they treated her like a pet, you know, even though she was fully aware of what's going on outside of her body, that she couldn't express it, I think that was what the true, that's what the character was. The character's actually going through some type of penance.
Yeah.
Here he's just some type of emo kid who couldn't handle his life, and now he just wants to, you know, give it all a rest.
Some honorable mentions that I'll mention here. Genius Fell, Captain Marvel. I miss him like hell. Because he was a great character. I mean,
was that the son?
Yeah,
the son, blue one.
Yeah, that was the son. Yeah, the one that Peter David wrote.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that was wonderful. I'll mention Ant-Man because Ant-Man, every incarnation of Ant-Man has been great. And Thunderstrike. The Thunderstrike in the MC2 universe.
I think
a hell of a lot better than the original Thunderstrike, actually. Because I like Derek Masters in the store, but as Thunderstrike, he was kind of eh. And, any other final comments you guys want to make on Legacy Heroes before we wrap it up? Just some general comments about Legacy Heroes from you guys. Brent, you're up.
I like them as long as they're done right and given a chance. Bart Allen, I'm talking to you.
Poor Bart.
You're talking to him Bart. From beyond the grave. Raph.
We forgot to mention Spider-Girl, but Spider-Girl's good, and Penance.
I hate Penance.
But yeah, I think legacy characters are great when they're done right, and if you know how to handle them, they can have magnificent runs like Kyle Rayner, mm-hmm. or they can flop like Bart and like a few others. Yeah. Okay. U.S. Agent.
Oh, God, yeah, U.S. Agent.
U.S. Agent flopped.
Yeah, because again, he was a replacement Cap. A lot of people forget that. They replaced Cap for a while, and it didn't really work out too well.
Speaking costume.
Mm-hmm. Brandon.
My only thing is I have to say is just keep them simple, honestly. Like I said before, take some old, take some new, mash them together, see what works. What doesn't work, you toss out, and you keep trying. That's the best way I can see to make a legacy character. Prime example, Tim Drake. Again, you know, he's a little bit of Dick. He's a little bit of Jason Todd, but he's not all of either one.
Yeah.
And that's why he works so well.
Mm-hmm. He's his own guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My final thoughts on this, make me care about the character. Don't just throw a character in and say, oh yeah, that dude is, you know, insert hero here now, because the other dude is like, you know, retired or in Tahiti having a vacation, so he decided, hey, have my costume. Here you go. Go ahead. Use it. No, that's not the way you make it work. You know, give me a reason to like the character, give him personality, make him fit in, and I'm all for it. So, again, make me care about the character, and anything will work if you're a legacy hero. That's all I have to say about that. Well, we're going in about, I guess, maybe 2.5 hours at this point. I don't even know anymore because we've technically been going for about 3, but I think about a half hour of that was wasted. So
half hour wasted?
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, we'll release that as the very, very quiet part where absolutely nobody was on the line, and I just kept it running. But, yeah.
Beat that Raging Bullets.
Oh, hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this will be released as episode 49, part 7. And
we'll...
Oh, come on, man. Come on, dude. You know, I'm a huge fan of Raging Bullets. Everybody knows that. It's just that once they got to episode 49, part, what was it, 5 this time, I left a comment on their blog and, well, on the forums, and I hope he saw it. You guys should start a spinoff podcast and name it episode 49.
Yeah, seriously.
Just keep having. This is episode 49, episode 1. This is episode 49, episode 74.
I gotta wonder, do they record for 3 days straight to get all their episodes done?
Yeah, pretty much.
Jeez.
Pretty much. That's the way they roll. But again, they're awesome, and I love you guys, and please don't hurt me. All right. Well, let's wrap this up with, everything that everybody's doing. Brent, have you decided on what your next BK's Bullets is going to be yet?
Can you guess the answer?
The answer to that would be, yeah, you're going to do the full run of Ambush Bug.
Azbats.
No. Actually, I'm saving Azbats for episode 75, so it's about a year.
Which part? Part 6 or part 13?
I don't know.
Part 47, part 92. And wait a minute, you say a year, you're being generous.
Okay, you're right. Year and a half.
There you go. But, yeah.
So, yeah, that's what's coming down the pipeline.
Awesome. Translation, nothing yet.
Yeah, I gotta get settled into school first.
Awesome. Cool. All right, well, once you do, check him out on RagingBullets.com. He's got awesome stuff. Brandon, are we going to see a Cordovan anytime soon?
Hopefully, yes. I just need to get my schedule done before, you know, season kicks in, and you won't ever see me again, because I may have to hang myself because I work in a toy store.
No! Don't do that.
Hopefully, on my next issue, though, I should have an interview with them with Erica Hesse and Jimmy Palmiotti at Wizard World.
Oh, cool. Awesome. How long was the Palmiotti?
Palmiotti, I only got a couple minutes with him, but it's a couple minutes of pure gold because he's just a jackass the whole entire time.
have you had a chance to listen to the CNI 100 yet?
No.
Give it a listen. That is pure Palmiotti gold right there.
Did you get your wallet back?
You know, he said that he was going to PayPal me the money, but I highly doubt that. And the wallet itself is way gone by now. I'm sure it's in, like, Tahiti somewhere or something. Bangladesh.
Some strippers, you know, pocketbooks and worse.
Right, sure, yeah. Dude, again, my favorite moment at any con, all right, at any panel I've gone to is that moment right there. I met your cousin on the bus. Don't worry about it. I'll get your wallet back. Absolutely pure gold right there. But, yeah, where can we find the quarter bin?
Oh, jeez. IndigoFire2525.libsyn.com.
Excellent. Cool. And, again, the episode where he had me on is syndicated on the Comic Timing feed, and we very well might end up syndicating the Erica Hesse / Palmiotti. That's in the works, but we'll work that out. I might actually add on to that. Like, if we are going to have it on here, perhaps I'll maybe just have a conversation with you about what it was like to, like, talking to them and that sort of stuff. We'll figure that out later on.
Okay.
Ref, Geeks Unite, will we see it before next June?
Before next June, probably. I actually plan on doing one before the end, before 300, basically.
Cool.
I want to get one done before the end of the month, and I have a week. A little bit less than a week, I think. Mm-hmm. Something like that. But yeah, I plan on doing a Geek Show episode. I might go solo. Like, I might not go with... I might just do something where I talk about my stuff and what's going on with me. I don't know.
Oh, like
just
because
I can. Well, yeah, exactly.
You know, if you do that, Juan might hit you.
That's true, but then I'll tell Juan to do his own version of it, and he'll be happy.
Geek Show, he's in her edition.
Dude, just splice it together as one episode. It's all good.
Exactly. And then, you know, like, I, you know what? I'll just edit it. Like, what about you, Juan? What's going on? I'll put his part in. Okay, thanks, Juan. And then there you go. That's it.
Well, I have no idea what you're talking about. So, Brent, how do you feel about this?
Ready to go sleep?
Yeah.
Yeah, good answer. Good answer, sir. Yeah, but anyway, geeksunite.libsyn.com, and I wouldn't be surprised if we end up recording an episode at CGS 300 of this show.
Not at all.
And of yours.
Yeah, but I'm not going to be surprised at all.
Yeah, but yeah, and it's freewebs.geeksunite, right?
Yes.
Freewebs, Comic Geeks Unite. Yeah, exactly. All right, before we wrap it up, here's a promo for Just Another Fanboy, and then we'll get into the end of the episode. Here we go.
Now here's a comic book podcast that I know you'll just love. Just Another Fanboy. Join your hosts Karen and Steven as they bring you the very best in podcast excellence. Steven talks comics, Karen talks celebrity gossip, and they both just have a rip-roaring good time.
I don't know about the rest of you, but when I read the issue with the reveal that Ronan was Echo, I could actually hear the sound, wah, wah, wah.
I didn't ask you, how much did it cost?
It was like $20.
The one you got me?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, well, don't do that anymore.
That's standard. Well, I had that gift certificate.
But still.
That's...
Wow.
That's standard.
Wow.
That's standard.
Steve Wacker has not, to the best of my knowledge, ever taken a bath in Jell-O with wicker mannequins dressed like the flying monkeys from The Wizard of Oz.
You know, like my Silver Surfer, sometimes you gotta
pull out a
couple
with.
Of fish before you get a bunny. If you are not reading Daredevil, you are a fool. A fool, I tell you. Read it. Go back. Get the trades. Cut out all the pictures. Bathe in them.
So if you like comics, movies, DVDs, TV, crotchety old men, rabid badgers, and a good laugh, you'll enjoy Just Another Fanboy. Try it out at www.justanotherfanboy.com.
JustAnotherFanboy.com. Check it out. That's damn good stuff right there. And that might have been the best promo for anything I've ever heard in my life.
I agree.
I'm going to go bathe in Daredevil pictures now.
My favorite line, though, is definitely you have to get a few fish before you get a rabbit. or bunny or whatever the hell he said. But yeah, anyway, it's late. Let's get out of here. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at thecomicforums.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. If you want to send a voicemail to Comic Timing, you can do so over at 1-888-654-2278. If you're outside the U.S., that's +1-305-437-8719. That entered the phone number 646-496-6848, followed by the pin 1234. It's a complicated process, but it's plenty of fun for me to hear from you folks, so go ahead and do that. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. And please dig us on dig.com. That'd be very nice. And send us an iTunes review on iTunes. Graciously appreciated. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And we're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts, which is brought to you by Eric Coward of Deliberate Noise. So for the bunch of people that are on this episode, for Brandon, for Rap, and for Brent, I'm Ian Levitsy, reminding everybody that out there, there's always... Okay, Rap, you can say it.
Time for comics.
Damn straight! Later, folks.
Freaking Superman had been called out, been called a bitch by Batman. Superman had cried in Wonder Woman's lap. Superman had done nothing in his own books, and freaking, I was just like, I'm so sick of this. Come on, give him a fucking moment. This is before Infinite Crisis number 7 came out too. So,
but honestly though, if you're in one, if I was in Wonder Woman's lap, I'd be crying too. Because I'd just be
yeah, that's happy. Yeah. It's so beautiful.
Especially Adam Jr.'s. Also joining us on the call is it's 11 o'clock on the dot. One second. That's two podcasts in a row. Two podcasts in a row.
Sorry. What's that?
That stays in. That stays in.
Yeah. That stays in the back. All right. Because I'm redoing this entire opening again. Fuck that. All right. In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I got lost my watch now.
Good, great. Perfect. In 5, 4, 3, 2. Hey there, folks.
I put it away.
All right, there we go. All right. Okay. All right. We good now?
Yeah.
Everybody good? Okay. And all I have to say is my super fast internet is so super fast. I don't care.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. Well, you were in the middle of a sentence when you dropped out.
I know.
Do you remember what the sentence was? Yeah.
And this has been the Great Space Coaster.
On the Great Space Coaster. Come on, boy.
Oh, God. Oh, Jimmy, can you stop singing that song right now? I'll change it around, okay?
Well, and see, this part right here is going to be copied and pasted into the part where we were still talking about Thor.
Sodomy!
And then how do you explain my absence?
Brent was in the bathroom.
For an hour.
As he's podcasting.
He's reading Chris Claremont's X-Men.
I'm out of toilet paper. Time to use Bruce Jones' Nightwing. Oh.
Well, don't do that, because then your toilet paper will turn into a giant blob.
Oh, what's ready to eat you?
Oh, God.
Night, Zatura.
I brought his hand back for you.
Oh, thanks. I thought it was yours, though.
He totally ignores you. Like, what? Ian Levinstein's
what,
talking
what, wait,
whatever?
Who? What?
Ian Jorgensen, what?
Whoa. How many people do you live with, Brent?
He lives with Tommy.
That dude's awesome. Like the ones where they keep people dying.
Frank Cassino will be replaced tonight by no one. He's just going to be there, sitting there, still on the call, but completely ignoring us.
Sorry. I put it on mute earlier when he went to the bathroom.
Well, I think
that was considerate.
Yeah. All right. But,
yeah, I didn't know they were coming in.
Yeah. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum. Wait a minute. That's the old address. God damn it, Ian. You suck. All right. Let's get that going one more time.
You fool.
How dare you?
Oh, man. What is the new... the forum space now?
It's the comicforums.com, but that's going to be a great blooper to put at the back. He's telling myself that I suck. All right, here we go.